Shattering Mist. We're considering now the testimony regarding not only the creation of the first man conceived in Yahweh's image, but also the story of life with God and man in the Garden of Eden. The text reads, Yahweh Almighty formed for association and accompaniment Adam from the powdery dust of the ground. He blew into his nostrils a life-giving, restoring, and sustaining conscience. And Adam came to exist as a living soul. Let's consider this slightly more amplified and from the actual words that Yah spoke. Yah was from Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, Yahweh's name. It was written in the original alphabet as an arm reaching down and out to us with an open hand. It shows two people standing upright, reaching up, looking up to God, not bowed down, not afraid of him, open up with open arms, reaching up to God. They're standing on both sides of a tent peg. A tent peg is something that secures a home, keeps it from blowing away, keeps it from the elements destroying it, enables it to be enlarged, makes it more secure. That is Yahweh's name. Easy to pronounce. All of those letters are used throughout the Hebrew language. It's only 22 letters in the Hebrew language. These four letters represent three of them. One is repeated. They are found in countless other words. They are easy to pronounce. They are always pronounced as I am sharing them with you, Yahweh. Elohim is the next word. Elohim speaks of Almighty, of the title God. It's not a name, it's a title. He said that he formed, Yasar. He forged, he fashioned, he planned, he prepared. F, for association and accompaniment, Adam. Ha Adam. And, you know, it's interesting that almost every time we read Adam, where we present it in English as the name Adam, it really is Ha Adam, which means the man. So Yahweh Almighty formed, fashioned, planned, and prepared for association and accompaniment F, the man. From or out of, this is men, afar. Afar is the, could be translated a powdery dust, very fine dirt, very small natural material particles from the elements, if you will, of the ground, the Adama. So here we see that Adam, the man, is based upon Adama, which is the earth itself, the ground, the elements themselves. And indeed, physically, that's what we are. Then it says, Yahweh blew, he breathed into his nostrils a life-giving, restoring, and sustaining. This is chayim. Chay is the Hebrew word for life. It was written here in the plural by chayim. He blew into his nostrils lives. So why would he use the plural here? Because there are two lives that we ought to be concerned about. And the next word that he's going to use is the very essence of what we need to make our lives plural. You see, we were all given mortal life. God speaks of that as a chai nefesh at the end of the sentence. And Adam, the man, came to exist as a living soul. But if we are going to experience lives, which is the plural, which is what he actually stated here, then we have to be cognizant of the reality that is our conscience that enables that. Our nesalma is what makes that possible. So he blew into the nostrils lives, restoring and sustaining conscience, a nesalma. The nesalma is our seat of judgment. It is the source of being able to recognize the difference between right and wrong, good and bad, that which is trustworthy and that which is not. It enables us to be discriminating and discerning. You see, exercising judgment today is considered a terrible sin. Being discerning and discriminating is considered to be horrible today because of the onslaught of political correctness. It is probably man's most debilitating disease, political correctness. And so God here is telling us that what makes us unique among all other animals is that he gave us an asoma, the ability to be discriminating, the ability to be discerning, the ability to be judgmental. It is that aspect of our nature that makes us like God. It is the aspect of our nature that enables lives to be plural, so that we can go beyond the mortal life offered through our soul to eternal life offered through Yahweh's Spirit. And Adam came to exist, Hayah, the man, Ha-Adam, came to be, Hayah. Hayah is the basis of Yahweh's name. So he says, and the man came to exist then as Yahweh. He came to exist as the potential for eternal. Because Hayah speaks of that which was, that which is, and that which will be. And it says that man came to exist like Yahweh, because Hayah, the Hebrew verb for existence, is the basis of Yahweh's name. I don't say that because I see similarities in it, in that it's Hayah, but because Yahweh himself used it as the basis of his name. When he introduced himself to Moshe, he said, Ihayah Asher Ihayah. That's Hayah in first person. I am. I was. I will be. Who I was. Who I am. Who I will be. Hayah is the basis of his name. And so here he uses the verb in direct association with Ha-Adam, telling us that we can exist like him. And that he gave us a living chai, soul, nefesh, consciousness. Now, there are two names listed here. They are linked for the purpose of close association and accompaniment by F, a word which symbolically represents the beginning and the end, the premise and the conclusion. In the beginning, Yahweh Almighty prepared Adam for the purpose of association, a close and personal relationship, which would endure throughout time. You have Yahweh, and you have Adam. They are connected by F for the purpose of association and accompaniment. Symbolism also being represented here. In the pictographs of ancient Hebrew, the Taw in F is depicted by way of an upright pole, which represents Passover, the doorway to heaven, the Maaseiah Yahusha, as well as the sign and symbol which visibly and tangibly demonstrates someone, the individual, the specific someone who has communicated a message. It serves as a signature. That someone, of course, is identified in the ram's head of ancient Hebrew with the Aleph being the first letter of F. It is two letters. The Aleph, depicted by a ram's head, speaks of the ram who enabled the doorway to heaven on Passover, the doorway to life, which is the Lamb of God. F, which begins with Aleph, shows the ram's head, speaking of unlimited power and authority. So we are now reading the message of the one with unlimited power and authority, of the ram who suffered on Pesach Passover, opening the doorway to life. That's what that word conveys. Yahweh's name, as we talked, was written Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh. The Yod which is depicted by way of an outstretched arm and a hand, conveys the willingness, authority, and ability to reach out and to do whatever work is required to accomplish a task. The mission is identified in the tent peg of the ancient Hebrew alphabet as a wall, because it speaks of securing and enlarging a protective enclosure. It's interesting that the wall in Hebrew is the single most repeated term. It is a conjunction in Hebrew. And as a conjunction, it means this and this. This with the addition of this. So God is saying that he, with the addition of his family, is what he is all about. By adding to man, when we come together as part of the covenant family, we are increased. We become more than we would otherwise be. There's addition going on here. That's what the wall conveys. It specifically, tangibly, also spoke of enlarging a protective enclosure, as I shared with you. But it always bears repeating, because if we reemphasize this, it becomes literally part of us. We transition from not knowing to knowing, and then from knowing to understanding. And understanding is a very powerful commodity, one that is facilitated by our nesama, by our conscience, our ability to exercise good judgment. Now, as we look at the place that God's home was represented, this Garden of Eden, we find that it will be Sukkah shelters that depicts the time that we are afforded the opportunity to camp out with God in paradise. And so on each side of that tent peg, we find a couple of hays, the Hebrew word for behold, pay attention, notice, look up, and Yahweh's name. And it is through them that we discover the beneficiaries of Yahweh's work, of his hand reaching out to us, and of his secure shelter are men and women who look up to their Heavenly Father and spiritual mother for salvation and protection. The ancient Hebrew he is the most complex letter, showing a man and woman standing, legs apart, walking, arms raised, pointing up to the heavens, paying attention to God, reaching up for his hand. That's the basis of his name. We'll consider the basis of his title, Elohim, when Shattering Myths returns after the commercial break. Before we consider the strokes that comprise the letters that comprise Adam's name, let's see what we can learn about Yahweh's title, Elohim. It is the first plural, it is the plural of El, which is the contracted form of Eloah. Eloah is the full title of God. It's comprised of two roots, the Aleph, Wah, Lamed, root means mighty, and the Aleph, Lamed, Hey, root conveys reverence and respect. The message is, revere the Almighty, and the Almighty will respect you. As we have discussed in ancient Hebrew, the Aleph, the first letter of the title that Yahweh has ascribed to himself, was written by depicting a ram's head. This served to denote strength, power, authority, might, capability, and leadership. It also conveyed the importance of God himself serving as the Passover lamb. The Lamed was drawn in the shape of a shepherd's staff, which is invocative of guiding, of protecting, of nurturing, and of caring for one's sheep. It's a metaphor for God's children and of taking care of them. So the title that Yahweh chose for himself is the sacrificial lamb of Passover, who has the strength, the power, authority, and might, the capability and leadership by way of a shepherd to guide, nurture, protect, and care for his children. Therefore, El, God, is presenting himself as all of these things. The Almighty, the Mighty One, who has the power, the authority, the capability to lead, to guide, to protect. caring for his children in a nurturing way. He is the mighty shepherd. The Aleph is also the first letter in Ab, Father. Continuing to learn, we discover that the O sound found in Elohim is from the Wa and Eloah. In ancient Hebrew, the Wa was depicted using a tent peg, as I have mentioned before, because it's the Wa is also found in Yahweh's name. So as we have just conveyed, it speaks of providing security, of establishing and enlarging a tent shelter or home where a family is protected from harm. And it speaks of being increased, of an addition. And Yeshayah, Isaiah 54, Yahweh explains the symbolism of the tent peg and its association with our spiritual mother, enlarging God's family and protecting God's children so that we can camp out with our Heavenly Father. Should you be interested, we will review that package in due time. The soft H in Elohim is derived, as we know now, from the Hebrew He, which depicts a person standing up and reaching up to God. Just like the O, which is from the Wa, we see this letter He as one of the three in Yahweh's name. It is representative of a picture of a person, their arms raised, pointing to the heavens, so as to say, look up, observe, and know God. That's what the Hebrew letter actually conveys in Hebrew today. The He is symbolic of men and women searching for and carefully considering God's revelation so that they might live. And you'll notice that those who observe God's witness are standing in His presence. They are not bowing down. The YM suffix in Elohim, which denotes plural in Hebrew, tells us that God represents Himself and He would like us to represent ourselves the same way, is as family, as father, mother, and child. So the YM suffix may not be germane to this graphic depiction, but should it be, what we find again is the repeat of the Yod, not in repeat in Elohim, but the repeat of a Yod. Now we have the final letter in Yahweh's name included in His title. In fact, the last three letters have all represent all three of the letters that comprise Yahweh's name, with the Wa, the He, and now the Yod. But the Yod, again, is the outstretched arm of God. It conveys His willingness and ability, desire, to reach down and to lift us up, to do whatever is required to complete the mission. And the Mem, the final letter in Elohim, was depicted by showing waves on the waters. It speaks of the source of life and of purification. It is from water that life emerges. Even human life is the water breaks when we are born. And it is the universal solvent. And so water is also used to wash and to purify. So it is symbolically the source of life and purification that comes from the set-apart spirit. Returning to the letters that comprise the words in Hebrew that comprise Yahweh's Torah instructions. And for those of you who say, you know, you're being way just too fixated on all of this, and that's not probably the majority who are listening to this program. If you're listening to this program, you genuinely want to know what God told us, and everything that He had to say is interesting to you. But if you consider Yahusha's testimony on the Mount, which was his initial and his longest public declaration, he didn't just say that the Torah will endure so long as the heavens and earth exist. He went right down to what we're talking about. He used the jots and tittles, and it's really not jots and tittles. There's no J in Greek. There's no J in Hebrew, so it couldn't have been a jot. It was a yod. A yod is the first letter in Yahweh's name. So he's speaking of the yod, which is the smallest of the Hebrew letters, which just tells you a lot about God. He begins his name with the smallest of all of the letters. So he's saying that the smallest letter and then the tittles. The tittles are the strokes on Hebrew letters. So if you have these Hebrew letters that have individual pen strokes. He says, write down to the smallest letter and the strokes that comprise the letters. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to be annulled. Nothing's going to be done away with that's written in the Torah. And so what we are doing is specifically what he encouraged us to do, to recognize there are enduring truths that are dependable, that are trustworthy, that are reliable, that are all in play, that are all vital to our understanding and us going from the first life to the second life, appreciating the benefit of lives that can be addressed, can be activated, can be integrated into our life through our nesama when we examine the strokes that comprise these letters. So with Elohim, as it expands the meaning of El, a mighty and powerful leader, the sacrificial lamb that provides the doorway to life as part of Passover, the capability of protecting and guiding us and caring for us like a shepherd in a nurturing way, in other words, the mighty shepherd, to include observant men and women, secure in God's home and his shelter, continuing to live when we look to him, when we reach up to him, when we grab hold of his hand and he lifts us up. We add to this that in the plural form, that God purifies us and gives us new life through his power and through the symbolism of water. Powerful things that we can learn about his nature and about our relationship with him. Now, turning to Ha-Adam, the man, Adam also begins with an Aleph, the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet, telling us that he was the first man, because this is the first letter. By using Aleph, the first letter in Yahweh's name, and the first letter in Yahweh's title, El, we learn that Adam was created in Yahweh's image, and that he was given the authority and the ability to do what was required to know God, to be part of God's family and home. That's what we are told by this letter, that God did, in fact, make us like him, capable. The second letter in Ha-Adam, the man, is a Delet. It denotes a doorway, suggesting that the path we must follow to life, to transition our mortality, to become more like God and to become eternal, is the doorway that was opened by the Passover lamb. It's the doorway to life. That if we approach it, that we will live forever. We will enjoy the benefit of lives. And just as we have discussed, the concluding mem and Ha-Adam speaks of water, which is the source of our mortal existence, and the needing of water to be purified so that we can walk through that doorway into Yahweh's home and live with him forever. We're equipped and empowered to find and open the doorway to God's home and be cleansed, becoming immortal as we walk through it. You may have noticed that Yahweh associated each of these things with Adam as being afar, that he was comprised of the fine dirt, the powdery dust, the very small natural particles of the Adama, the ground, the soil, indicating that humans have a physical nature. So he has told us that there are three aspects of our nature that we were born with, if you will. We were conceived with. We have a physical nature. That physical nature it's got advantages. I mean, I don't want to completely poo-poo the physical nature. You know, there are a lot of pleasurable aspects of having a physical nature. You know, it feels good to have the sun on our skin. I love the sound of the wind blowing through the trees. The feel of running water, particularly in a creek as you'd put your hand or feet in it. The taste of good food and good wine. The ability to make beautiful music and to listen to it. The sound of Yahweh's name, His testimony, resonating in our voices and entering our ears. The ability to touch another person, to experience love in that way. With a physical body, we are less mobile than we would be in a spiritual one, but we are still mobile. There are aspects of our physical nature that are good. We grow. We become stronger. But physical natures erode over time. They devolve. They are flawed. And from the dust to the dust, we are, if we do not transcend this life. So there's aspects of our physical composition that we ought to know and consider. But he said that with the man, there was something more than just being made up of physical particles. He said that he gave us, blew into our nostrils, a chayim, a lives-giving, nesama, a lives-giving conscience, the ability to discern truth and deception, right and wrong. So our nesama is something very unique. It's only mentioned in association with Adam and his descendants. It is the one thing that sets us apart from the animals that God also says have a living soul. So we, like the animals, are comprised of the physical elements of the universe. And we, like the animals, have a living soul. Our soul provides our consciousness, which is the thing that differentiates, according to God and also to our awareness, a ability to observe one's environment and respond to it. It enables us to be observant. And not just observant, but to respond. Observing the truth, coming to know what God said, coming to know who He is and what He is offering, is a very good thing. But the ability to respond to what we observe, that's all part of having consciousness, a nefesh soul, is what puts us in such a wonderful position. But even with that, you know, when we realize that, you know, animals, some, many, do think, they do process the information that they observe so that they can respond appropriately to their environment. But in terms of approaching what one observes with a moral compass, the ability to be discriminating and judgmental and exercising good judgment, that is something that God gave uniquely to humans. Now, most of us, of course, have squandered that. Today, political correctness says, if you exercise that, we're going to ostracize you. Children are indoctrinated throughout education from kindergarten all the way through graduate school to embrace an entirely different paradigm where we ought not be judgmental. We ought not be discriminating. We ought not be discerning. And so man has been conditioned today not to use his or her conscience. But the conscience represents the third aspect of our nature. We are triune in this way. We have a conscience, we have consciousness, and we have a physical body. That's how we were conceived. And God says as much. He says that He nefash blew into Adam's up nostrils, chayam, lives-giving, restoring, sustaining, renewing, prolonging, neshama, conscience, that which is mankind's seat of judgment, which enables us to make good decisions so that our responses to what God is offering are thoughtful, reasonable, rational, moral, and good. So Adam came to exist as a living nefesh, a living soul. A soul represents the third component, as we've said, of Adam's nature. Therefore, man is a material being with a conscience and consciousness. Nepach means blue and breathe. It is only one letter removed from nefesh, which means soul. As a mortal animal consciousness, it is in turn from nefash, which means to take a breath and refresh oneself. It is interesting that nefesh soul, which is written nun pei shin, that in the ancient Hebrew, the nun looks like a sperm. It is said to be a seed taking root. It speaks of children, of heirs, of inheritance, and of the continuance of life. The letter pei was drawn in the shape of a mouth, and thus represented the breath of life and of speaking. Similarly, the shin was depicted using teeth, and thus spoke of language serving as nourishment for our souls. So in this case, nefesh is the breath of life, which is nourished by words. Whose words do you suppose would nourish our life, causing us to enjoy lives, plural? Suppose it might be Yahweh's. But we'll return to Shattering Myths for the final segment after the commercial break. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. We're considering the words that Yahweh communicated to us about our nature. And understanding who we are tells us a great deal about how we might make the most of our life. And actually transition to lives, plural. As I've shared with you, chayim is the word that God chose. It's the plural of chai. Chai means life-giving, that which renews and restores life, that which invigorates and sustains life, that which protects and preserves life is from chai. But then it is written in the plural, so we're speaking of the plural of those things. Also, you should know that the only difference between Haya, which is the basis of Yahweh's name, which speaks of existence, and Chaya, is that Chaya and Haya are differentiated only by the initial letter, being the hard H, which we consider as a CH sound in English, and the soft H, which is a vowel with the conveying the sound of the English A. So Chaya and Haya are very closely related terms, both closely related to Yahweh's name. Now, returning to the pictographs of Paleo-Hebrew, the cheth of Chai, life, is represented by a tent wall and conveys the idea of being protected, of being separated from that which is destructive and deadly. And the yod, depicted as an arm and a hand, signifies the authority and the power to do whatever is required. Therefore, chai depicts God having the power and authority to do all of the work required to protect us, separating us and sheltering us from that which is deadly and destructive. By juxtaposing chayim, lives-giving, restoring and sustaining, and Nesama, the seat of judgment, discerning and discrimination, Yahweh has linked the terms and defined the purpose of our Nesama conscience. In this context, the Nesama represents the ability to choose life or death, to accept restoration rather than our annihilation. Our Nesama, our conscience, enables us to be discerning, to be judgmental, to distinguish that which is reliable from that which is not. It therefore endows us with the potential to know God and to respond to his gifts of relationship and salvation, or to reject them. In Job, which serves as the ultimate referendum on good and evil, Yahweh revealed, indeed the spirit, she in mortal man, and the Nesama of the Almighty provides understanding and teaches them. So, here is Job 32:8, where our Nesama is clearly defined. He talks about the role that our Nesama plays in conjunction with the Ruach spirit. The Ruach spirit is the aspect of God's nature, feminine in Hebrew. So it's she. That's why it was written as that way, the spirit she. The set-apart spirit is our spiritual mother in the covenant model. That one of her responsibilities is to enlighten us, to enrich us with God's teaching. Now, she doesn't do this on her own. What she does is those who are observant, who examine and consider Yahweh's testimony, she helps them better understand it, making that transition between knowing and understanding. So, indeed, the spirit in mortal man, Enosh, the weak and frail of humankind, and the Nesoma of the Almighty, collectively provide understanding and teaching. So, it is this ability to be judgmental, to exercise good judgment, particularly with the spirit, within mortal man, that enables us to understand. Now, the spirit isn't in all men. There are two spirits, first of all. There's the spirit of Yahweh, the set-apart spirit, and there's the fallen Malach, which are spiritual messengers who have chosen to disassociate from God and would like all of humankind to follow them into the abyss. And so it is possible to have the Spirit of God and the Nesoma of God reside within our mortal nature. If we use our Nesoma and we use our Nefesh to observe what God is offering and respond appropriately to what God is offering, His Spirit comes to reside in us. And the combination of His Spirit and His Nesoma, of His ability to exercise good judgment, is collectively what provides understanding, teaching us. That is what is explained in Job. And that is the thing that you always want to do. When you're trying to understand Yahweh's terminology, if you come across a word and you say, boy, you know, I'm not sure that the lexicons are doing this word justice, just look at how God uses it, and He will define the term for us.